get ready to pay more at the pump. City Council is increasing your local gas tax. Six public schools look to have their names changed. And uproar over photoshopped pictures of girls in St. John's County. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. Join us now. It's 549-2937. Then later, they've been off for a year in this pandemic, but the Jacksonville Home and Patio Show is back, and we have a ticket giveaway. Keep listening for that. First, though, it's Friday, and here to discuss a busy week in the news, we welcome Dan Scanlon of the Florida Times Union. Hey, Dan.
Hey, good morning.
Regular contributor Charles Griggs. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, Melissa.
Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal. Hi, Tim.
Good to be here.
And WJCT's own reporter, Sydney Bowles. Sydney, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So good to have all of you on the show. Already getting your calls, and we'll go to your calls in a moment. The number to join our Friday roundtable, 549-2937. And let's begin with our top story. The Jacksonville City Council this week voted 14-5 in favor of doubling the local gas tax from 6 to 12 cents a gallon. So how will the money be used? Well, for a slew of infrastructure projects. It will also free up other funds for septic tank removal in some city neighborhoods. And nearly $250 million to convert the downtown skyway to automated vehicles that can also run on city streets. We begin the hour with a closer look at where your additional gas tax money will go. Give us a call, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. Dan Scanlon, let's begin with you. Despite a lot of public pressure from taxpayers out there, City Council decided to keep money in to convert the skyway to driverless cars, autonomous vehicles. We had JTA CEO Nat Ford on the show yesterday. He said we could be seeing these on city streets within about 6 years.
You know, when you see the current Skyway Express and how few people use it, the ability to turn that into an autonomous vehicle system and then have those autonomous vehicles running on Bay Street and some of the transport hubs and the La Villa hub, it sounds like a great idea. I mean, obviously, I'm still not a super fan of autonomous driving cars, but the infrastructure is going to be added to make sure they're safe on the streets. And if anything's going to start getting people to use mass transit in the downtown area and maybe save us some parking fees and parking garage fees, that might just be it. It's just too bad the public didn't get a chance to vote on this increase, because gas is already creeping up to $3 a gallon here in the state, as I write every week in my traffic column for the Times Union.
That's right. And a poll done at UNF, Charles Griggs, found that the majority of the public didn't want this gas tax increase. Jacksonville, though, will join 31 other Florida counties that already assess the maximum tax of 12 cents a gallon. And going past the Skyway bit of this, infrastructure projects that have been long overdue will finally get some attention, which is going to be a very good thing for many neighborhoods.
There's been a debate on infrastructure projects and the need for infrastructure improvements in Jacksonville for a long time. What we've seen over a period of time is that certain districts and certain areas of town have gotten, it has been an inequity in how that's been done. What's happening now is what we'll go forward in looking for is accountability and how these projects are laid out. The infrastructure is a very important part of it, because it allows for neighborhoods that have been left behind to be able to compete with other neighborhoods in terms of quality of life and being able to draw businesses and draw the type of development that helps communities thrive. And many of the communities that, especially in areas in the urban core and north areas north and west of the river, have been left behind. We know that from all of the studies, and there've been inequities there. So what we want to know is, when are these things going to take place, and how long are they going to take to get done? And so that'll be, we're going to be waiting to see on that one as well.
It's 549-2937 to join us. Tim Gibbons, in addition to what Charles mentioned, the Skyway money, JTA also wants to buy a second St. John's River ferry boat, upgrade their bus stops, do complete streets projects that add pedestrian and bicycle lanes, and they're going to help build 19 miles of paths for the Emerald Trail. That's the green belt that Groundwork Jacksonville is working to construct all around the city's urban core neighborhoods, and it is also getting a lot of money from this increased gas tax. A very popular project, the Emerald Trail, is built as a way to make the city more walkable, more sustainable. It's seen as an economic development driver, a way to connect neighborhoods. So when all of these pieces start moving together, how do you think the business community will see this investment in the city and how it might make Jacksonville more attractive for corporate relocation and all of the things that you cover at the Business Journal?
Well, the Emerald Trail might be almost as popular as the Skyway is unpopular. Hmm. So with having those, you know, kind of tied together is interesting. But yeah, as you alluded to, the Emerald Trail can have a massive economic development impact. It's not just creating an amenity, particularly for businesses that might relocate downtown, but it's tying together an entire area. It's creating recreational space. It will increase property values along the trail. So we'll have that type of impact. And at the same time, the Skyway, the beginning of converting the Skyway to a system that could go further and reach out more will help deal with the transportation bottleneck or lack of capacity that the city will face if it grows. The Skyway is a whole complicated thing that you have and will, I'm sure, do, you know, more shows on the details of that. But the idea that if we have more people who come downtown, if we have more people who are brought here to walk on the Emerald Trail, they have to get around somehow. And that's where mass transit plays a role.
Right, exactly right. And Sydney Bowles, it was interesting to see, despite the muddying of the waters over the concerns about the Skyway funding, in the end, this passed easily 14-5. And this is a local government body that's not really known for approving tax increases of any kind. So that was interesting to watch. It wasn't even a close vote.
Yeah, no, it was definitely interesting. I feel like it's, you know, I'm new to Jacksonville, so this is all secondhand to me, but I have been interested to hear of Mayor Curry's evolution on this kind of thing. But, you know, I think it speaks to, a willingness to invest in a bigger and bolder vision of the future. I think specifically, it's interesting that this is happening now, right? Because I think nationally, worldwide, I feel like we're coming out of this really dark year and we're beginning to look towards a future that maybe looks a little bit brighter with the coronavirus, you know, mostly behind us, fingers crossed. And I kind of have to wonder if this willingness to dream big is a part of that, like, cultural feeling that we're having, that maybe there's a light at the end of this tunnel.
Yeah. Dan Scanlon, you know, the mayor clearly sees this as his legacy project, and he has evolved on taxation. He certainly wasn't a big supporter of the half-cent sales tax for school repair and construction. And so this has been a remarkable evolution. And what about the comments from some of the city council members that we've got to change outdated thinking in Jacksonville about underinvestment, the city has been falling behind because of its refusal to invest in itself? This is a new attitude we're seeing from some local leaders.
Well, you know, we are seeing finally some downtown development. The Three Sisters, those classic buildings in the middle of downtown, obviously this week, the big new production being announced that Tim will probably be talking about later on the South Bank in San Marco. But it still is sad to drive through downtown, even on a business day, and look at all of the emptiness there. So all of this, you fix the infrastructure, you start making the roads nicer to drive on, you give us an automated Skyway Express system that gets you here and there around downtown, and then could expand to San Marco and elsewhere where you might want to go and visit a restaurant and then come back to your condo in downtown or on the riverfront. I think it is a win-win, whether we see it in 10 years, whether it continues is the question mark. Anything could stop a project in its tracks. Take a look at a certain Bergman 2 that's been sitting empty and now finally is going to get developed.
All right, let's go to your calls now. If you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. Our top story this week, the city council voted in a gas tax increase that will pay for a slew of projects across Duval County. You will pay at the pump 6 cents more a gallon. What do you think? What are your questions? 549-2937. Anthony on the north side. Hi, Anthony. Good morning.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't mind the, you know, advancements, you know, doing and making investments, but it just seems like, what's the priority for all this stuff? I live on the north side. When you had the greater Jacksonville plan down, you know, like we paid taxes for that too. And by the time we got round to dealing with the north side, there was no money. So now you're telling us to pay for stuff again. And like, so what's the priority? Roads over here are pathetic. And nothing's being done on this side of town. But yet still we're paying into all these plans, and the mayor doesn't even ask our opinion. He just said, I want to do this, about his legacy. His legacy also includes trying to sell JEA. So, I mean, like, hey, forget all the fronting. When are you going to do something for the citizens on the west side and the north side of town whose taxes for years and decades, and nothing's happening?
Anthony, thanks so much for that. And there is a lot of frustration and skepticism, Charles Griggs, about this. Can you address Anthony's question? And in light of the fact, too, that this gas tax hike is intended to primarily address these longstanding problems with poor infrastructure on the north and the west side neighborhoods.
Yeah, Anthony makes an excellent point. Regarding priorities, you saw two council members during the committee of the whole try to make file amendments, Councilman Bowman and Councilman Freeman, regarding prioritization under what would have been called a Urban Core Development Authority. Those amendments, did not, they died, of course. But, you know, it will be interesting to see how we get prioritization here, because those are issues that have, you know, people on the north side have been trying to address for decades, and it has hurt the community. You know, another thing, Melissa, is that Anthony mentioned the Better Jacksonville Plan. The Better Jacksonville Plan was a legacy project for then-Mayor John Delaney, which was, you know, in many people's eyes, was a great effort, a great project. But that project got dogged around the courthouse, cost overruns and so forth. So, and what all of the greatness out of that project, it was still not enough. And here we are now, you know, trying to catch up to those things that we did not finish or did not continue, a continuation of the Better Jacksonville Plan. So prioritization is going to be important here as the city continues to struggle for an identity outside of the Jacksonville Jaguars. You know, we have a very vibrant river. We have great beaches, weather, all of that stuff, but really no identity. And the city is still struggling with that and hoping that rebuilding or at least investing in infrastructure in these types of tomorrow projects with the U2C will help with that.
Yeah. Deborah in East Arlington. Hi, Deborah. Happy Friday.
Hi. I'm calling about the gas tax. I'm just grateful that it's taken place. I'm grateful that the city council has shown the courage to get this done because it is desperately needed. Jacksonville has lagged behind most of the state and all of the country in getting things done. This is a beautiful city. I love it. I lived here all my life, and we just lack a lot of things that need to be done. So the sales tax, I'm ready for it. I don't care if it had been 15 cents. I'm just happy it's been done.
All right, Deborah, thank you for your thoughts. Lots of calls. Janet in Fruit Cove. Hello, Janet.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, I wanted to say I hear Anthony on the north side, and I totally agree with him. I'm a lower income individual, but I drive, I'm a pet sitter, so I drive around a lot taking care of people's animals in the community. And, I don't mind paying the tax, but I hope there's things in the program for the north side and for the west side and for lower income people like me. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't mind paying the tax either, and we do pay the tax, But, you know, how are we going to benefit? I hope we do, because I get tired of seeing everybody benefit and there's nothing in it for us.
Janet, yeah, thank you. Thank you, Janet. Here's a tweet from a listener. She asks, will there be a dashboard similar to what the school district is doing for its sales surtax to show us how the gas tax money is being spent? Or will it just become a slush fund? How can we be sure the mayor won't give this money to his corporate billionaire friends? Okay, Tim Gibbons, you know, there's always this cynicism among the taxpayers about how their money's going to be spent and how we can track these expenditures.
I'm not sure about the dashboard, but you can rest assured that the I say this as having been involved in doing some watchdog reporting around Better Jacksonville coverage, that the spending of the gas tax will be one of the most watched things by the media in coming years, because the entire promise is that you are going to use this to help the neighborhoods that have been abandoned. Not to add my own note of cynicism, but as we've been talking about this newfound commitment to public investment, I think there's a couple points worth noting. One is that this more gets us up to baseline than pushes us into the future. It fixes those roads that have been long ignored. It doesn't necessarily do new things. Mm-hmm. You do see using public dollars in some downtown investments, for example, that projects that would not get done without public involvement, you know, the city can use its funds, but it's somewhat unclear if a gas tax is the way to really propel us into the future, when you consider that gas usage has been dropping, you know, for years. Cars are getting more efficient, cars are going electrical. Gas tax as a funding mechanism, even for road projects, has some problems with it. So
yeah,
it will be interesting to see over the next 30 years how this plays out.
That's right. Very good point. Paul emails the show, people always oppose taxes, but they enjoy what they pay for. So if you want to use the roads, enjoy clean water and a better infrastructure, quit whining, he says. Lee tweets the show, people on the north side are outraged at the lack of services. Now we'll see if things might change. The average cost to a driver with the increase of the gas tax, tweets another listener, could be $30 to $45 a year. That's groceries or a tank of gas that you will pay more for each year. Let's take a few more calls. Milda in Jacksonville. Hello, Milda. How are you?
Hi, pretty good. Long time listener, first time caller.
Great.
So definitely nervous and honored.
Oh, no, it's great to hear your voice. What are your thoughts?
Hey, so I'm relatively new to Jacksonville. I only moved here in 2008, and just from that time span, you can see how much the city has expanded and grown.
Yeah.
However, you do see the growing pains as well. I'm originally from Lithuania, so for me, like, pedestrian culture is pretty huge.
Oh, right.
So it's kind of astounding after moving here and seeing that the sidewalks are not really much of a thing. Echoing the points of previous callers, I think one of the biggest issues is the transparency. You know, we'd be liking to see, like, you know, which neighborhoods are going to be being invested in, what actually is going to be fixed. I never saw any representative or anybody reaching out at, like, more of a local neighborhood level to actually help people understand what the hell is going on their legislature. Another thing, and I'm going to keep this short, what is the cost effectiveness between, like, raising the gas tax from 6 to 12 cents versus that half-cent increase on sales tax?
Right. We're talking about two different types of revenue and, two different amounts. So lots of points there from Milda. Let's begin, Sydney Bowles, with the comment she made that this isn't a walkable city. This isn't a pedestrian-friendly city. This money is going toward our car culture. You have to have a car for the most part to get around this city, even though the Emerald Trail is getting some money, and that will be a really exciting new addition for pedestrians and cyclists. But yeah. And despite what Tim said, Tim made a great point. You know, we are going to be driving more hybrid and electric vehicles over time, not right away, but at a certain point in time. So there may be diminishing returns with this gas tax.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So, all right. Couple of things. There is a really long window for this gas tax, right? This is basically $1 billion over 30 years. When we think 30 years into the future, life is going to look really different in ways that we can't even really imagine right now. Mm-hmm. And the projects that we think are the most important now may be overtaken by projects that become more urgent in the coming years. So I think to the previous caller, Anthony's point, and some of our other callers, it is really imaginable. It's easy to see a future in which, you know, certain infrastructure projects on the north and west sides become, well, you know, we'll get to that after this thing that sort of became the most urgent thing, you know, 15 years from now. I think it's true that we have calculations now on how we expect the transition to hybrid and electric vehicles to go in the coming decades. But those are projections. And, you know, Ford released the electric F-150 recently. We may see the transition happen quicker. And so it is a gamble that this, you know, $1 billion over 30 years will really manifest, and that it'll be used in the way that we're, that it looks like it's going to be used now.
If you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable, where we discuss the biggest stories of the week with Sydney Bowles, Charles Griggs, Tim Gibbons, Dan Scanlon, and myself, and your calls. Lots of people still waiting to weigh in on the gas tax, but we do need to move on and talk about some other headlines and stories from the week. The number to join us, 549-2937. Well, also making headlines this week, Duval County Public School Superintendent Diana Green is recommending the school board change the names of six public schools. Now, she made this call as both sides of the issue held demonstrations earlier this week outside the school board headquarters. The school board will make a decision next week. Now, here are the recommendations. Six schools named for Confederate generals will see their names likely change. Joseph Finnegan Elementary will become Anchor Academy. Stonewall Jackson Elementary will become Hidden Oaks Elementary. Jeb Stuart Middle will become Westside Middle. Kirby Smith Middle will become Springfield Middle School. Jefferson Davis Middle will become Charger Academy. And the most prominent change, Robert E. Lee High School will become Riverside High School. And Dan Scanlon, three other schools, two named after the French colonizer Jean Ribault and one named after President Andrew Jackson, will see their names stay the same.
Who, with his team, actually helped found this area. And then Andrew Jackson, pretty tough when you have your city's namesake. I can understand there's some historical reasons for that. But, you know, the public in this case did have a chance to weigh in with the opinion ballot. And they wanted it. Diana Green then went along with it. And with all the protests we've had and issues with Confederate statues, I might say maybe it's just about time or past time that this should have been done.
Charles Griggs, what are your thoughts about this? And also the demonstration that we saw outside the school board with people waving the Confederate flag around. We might have lost Charles there for a second. Tim Gibbons, you know, this whole recommendation that we got from the superintendent this week came after months and months of meetings and even a formal voting process where anyone with a stake in this was allowed to cast a ballot that the supervisor of elections monitored. This has just been an exhaustive process.
It has indeed. Exhaustive and exhausting, I think. It does feel like this was a decision that was made, though, with the support of the community. Clearly, there's people in the community who do not support it, but by and large, this was a, you know, the Chamber of Commerce waded into it in support of changing the names. It does seem that there's just a general sense that, come on, let's change these, let's move ahead. You know, obviously, Ribault not being changed, that one, frankly, I think had more of a tension between different groups and not just two sides, a whole variety of opinions on that. And as Dan mentioned, the changing the name of the school named after the namesake of the city has its own set of issues, but there didn't seem to be a sense that business community, you know, nonprofit leaders, pretty much across the board, people felt that it was time to just make this change and move on.
Sydney Bowles, you covered these protests and demonstrations and, you know, groups like the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville, 90 Forward, the NAACP, they were all assembled and calling for these changes, which, by the way, they've been calling for years.
Yeah, They actually have asked the school board to change all 9 names, even though after this vote, the school community determined that they wanted to keep those 3 that we mentioned earlier. I don't know that that's necessarily going to happen, but that's what they're calling for. They held this protest in front of the public school headquarters this week, and they were met with some folks waving Confederate flags and singing Dixie. And I'll just say it was the most heated confrontation between the two groups that I've witnessed myself. There were peacekeepers and cops trying to keep folks separated, and the 904 word Northside Coalition folks trying their best to drown out the folks singing Dixie and calling out some frankly pretty disturbing things at those protesters. So it was really heated, and it's not over, even though the votes have been cast.
Hmm. And Charles Griggs, you know, these name changes are sort of phase 2 of what the city already underwent when the first wave was the removal of Confederate statues and memorials, beginning with the Heming statue in Heming Park. That was the most prominent removal. There are other statues, though, that still haven't been removed. They've been covered up, but they haven't been removed around town yet.
Yeah, there's an old saying, Melissa, when you know better, you do better. And I think that as people sort of get closer to and reconcile with our history and know the facts about our history, they want to create a better community for everyone. And that may, in some cases, lead to things like renaming schools and removing statues, because those images are disturbing to many people in the community. It is clear that the majority of people in this community want to move forward. They want progress, mm-hmm. and they don't want to be bogged down in the past and images and information that remind people of the bad part of our history. You know, they want to know. They want to move forward. And removing a statues, you know, albeit it may be a situation where we have to be careful how that is administered, but it needs to happen. It needs to happen in order for this community to move forward. And what we see also, that also plays into the community we want to be. And, you know, we talk about infrastructure building. We talk about automation and so forth. We really want to be a community that's moving forward and beyond and past and know more about our history and learn from it.
It's 549-2937, Les on the West Side. Hello, Les. Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to ask a question. My daughter spent a couple of years in France, and she told me that over there is no reference whatsoever to the Nazi regime. And I just want, people over there are considered to be traitors of the German people. And I just wondered, has there ever been any kind of reference or insinuation about that being the same case with us over here? And I came from Forest, so I mean, I went through the name change, but has anybody ever thought about the idea that all these Confederate folks were traitors to the American people?
Thanks, Les. You know, Tim Gibbons, the wave of protests we saw last summer, the Black Lives Matter movement, is really an attempt to force that kind of reckoning in America over our history, the kind of reckoning Germany had after World War II, the kind of reckoning South Africa had when apartheid was dismantled there with its Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And in Germany, of course, there was the Nuremberg trials and other ways of stamping out Nazism. In America, we looked the other way for 150 years. And the reckoning is only happening now.
There is. And that's history isn't dead, it's not even history sort of thing. That the past isn't dead, it's not even history sort of thing. Where you look at the entire lost cause sort of idea and ideology has just been let run through our history up until the present, and people are beginning to push back on that. And you know, having spent time in Germany, yeah, it's very different. No, I mean, legally, you can't fly the swastika. There's prohibitions that would be against the First Amendment here. But the idea that these are not the honored war dead just because they fought for the country, and in the case of the Confederacy, fought against the country. I grew up north. I still find it somewhat strange that we have military bases named after people who rebelled against the country. That just seems kind of weird. Without weighing the entire debate of whether it should be changed, it is an oddity of American culture that we celebrate people who were, you know, insurrectionists.
And you do have to go back into history to the early 20th century to learn about that. There was a concerted effort to sanitize and whitewash that history. Now, Sidney Bowles, the school board still has to vote on these name changes next week. So it's not quite final yet, but we can see which way this is going.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be a remarkably inflammatory decision if the school board were to go against the will of the people and the recommendations of the superintendent. That doesn't mean it's impossible, but I think it's fairly likely that the school board will, you know, agree with what the voters have decided, and we'll start to see those moves towards name changing happen.
And a tweet from Roselle, please remember, take them down, Jax, who initiated all of this and has been vigilant in this fight. And as we talk about name changes to six local schools, not nine as was originally recommended, but six, if you're just tuning in, the number to join us is 549-2937. And let's take one more call on this and then we'll move on. It's Peter on the south side. Peter. Hi, Peter. You're on the air. Hey, Peter. Good morning.
Hi. I appreciate this. This problem is not going to go away. In France, they have not acknowledged the excesses of the Vichy French government. In South Africa, there is still a strong Boer movement for independence. So I think 100 years from now, we will still be talking about this. It's not going to go away.
I guess we'll have to see, Peter. I appreciate your thoughts. Thank you for your call. Okay, lots more school news to talk about. We need to make mention of a terrible story. The teenage boy accused of killing 13-year-old Tristan Bailey earlier this month is going to be tried as an adult on a first-degree murder charge. 14-year-old Aiden Fucci has been in custody in Daytona Beach since his arrest May 10th. And so, you know, without going into the horrors of the way she died, Dan Scanlon, this is just a really difficult story to talk about. This family lost their daughter on Mother's Day, and now a 14-year-old is being tried as an adult in her murder.
You know, as we started talking today, the young man was actually in court as an adult for his first appearance. The decision made yesterday after a grand jury met in secret and decided to charge him as an adult. The state attorney, Larissa, was quite brutal in his comments yesterday, 114 defensive stab wounds on the young lady. She obviously was fighting for his life. Premeditated is basically the reason for the decision. Larissa stating that each time that the knife fell, that was a conscious decision to do that. And then the statement that he had told friends earlier in the night that he was going to kill or stab someone. So the only question I've got here is, this is a very young man going into an adult court system, and I have to hope that mistakes will not be made in the prosecution and defense so that this becomes a very fair trial for him. We've had some other young men and women who have been tried in Jacksonville in this area over the years and have either had their cases overturned or have not done well in the adult jail system.
That's right. Charles Griggs, Florida, charges more juveniles as adults, honestly, I think, than almost any other state. That said, this is a particularly horrific case that has aroused strong emotions in this community.
Yeah, it is. In the face of this tragedy, Melissa, it is very difficult to, you know, try to wrap your arms around a young man that age having the capacity to commit such a crime. In all likelihood, at the conclusion of this case, this young man is probably going to be maturing. He's going to be mature while incarcerated. At this point, we will never know what would have been of this young man had he, had an opportunity to mature as a normal teen. Normal teens don't create these types of crimes. In thinking about this, one of the things that the thoughts that came to my mind was, how did we get here? We have to ask ourselves a lot of questions mm-hmm. about our, what's going on with our kids, what's going on within our family, within our family structures. For someone to, have the willingness and the want to do something like this. And like Dan said, there are more questions to be answered, around the fairness of a trial. Certainly we want that to happen, but there's the family to think about in this capacity as well. Mm. There are just a lot of questions here that need to be answered. And hopefully we can prevent something like this from happening again.
That's right. Now, this story did gain national attention. And another story out of St. John's County is also putting the school district there under national scrutiny. The school board in St. John's is looking to change the district's dress code. Now, this came after a national outcry. Reports that dozens of girls at Bartram Trail High School had their yearbook photos photoshopped, edited, changed without their consent to cover up their chests and shoulders. No boys' images were photoshopped, even though there are boys wearing nothing but Speedos in the high school yearbook. And Sydney Bowles, this is part of a national trend in the nation's high schools and middle schools. Girls tend to get fingered for dress code violations at a much higher rate than boys. The images that were photoshopped weren't inappropriate. They were girls wearing normal clothing. So some of these girls spoke out at the school board workshop telling the adults that their policies are sexist, that girls are made to feel ashamed of their bodies, and that not enough attention is paid to getting boys to behave themselves. The onus is more put on the girls to cover themselves up. So, what happened in St. John's, I think, is reflective of a problem in schools across the country.
I would say it's a problem in society.
Yeah.
Chops to those girls. Their eloquence, their self-possession in speaking up in these instances is really, mm-hmm. really remarkable. Honestly, okay. I respect the heck out of that. It was not so long ago when I remember being a teenager myself and being made to feel that my body was a problem. I think girls across the country are very familiar with ideas that we are responsible for making sure that boys don't misbehave, when in reality we are all responsible for our own behavior, and it is inappropriate to ask girls to take that on. I think, I guess I'll leave it there. I just want to once again shout out these girls for just making a fuss. I really, really respect their self-possession in those really high profile environments.
Sure. Here's Professor Lorna Bracewell of Flagler College, who we had as a guest the other day, speaking about this.
Its aim is not to impose sexist, racist, classist, and heteronormative ideals of what's respectable or appropriate, which I think is often the aim of a lot of dress codes.
That's an interesting take from one academic who studies gender and inequality in society. So let's go to Karen in St. John's County. Hi, Karen. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. It's actually Taryn with a T, Taryn O'Keefe.
Oh, Taryn. I apologize. We missed it. Yeah. Go ahead, Taryn.
That's okay. My stepdaughter is Riley O'Keefe, and she's one of the young ladies that spoke at the school board meeting. And so I just wanted to call in to basically have a voice. We're working very hard to try to bring equality to what is understood to be the number one school system in the state. And we think we should be the leaders there to show that we need to do right by our girls. So I have asked a few times and in person So hopefully they postpone the vote that's supposed to occur on June 8th to allow time for a committee to be formed to include students and a mixture of administrators. And I'm just hoping they really get the message that that's the right thing to do. And hopefully we won't be back here next year when it gets hot.
Yeah. And I have to say, I really admire your daughter, Riley O'Keefe. She sort of became the public face of this for whatever reason. Her image was the one that was picked up by a slew of national media outlets where you see the original photo of her in the yearbook and then the photoshopped image of her right next to it, where the person that did the photoshopping simply colored in the tank top she had on under another sweater, colored it in to raise the neckline just a little bit. And so it was, you know, the original photo was, in my view anyway, perfectly appropriate. And so when you could see that image, Taryn, side by side, it was really remarkable that somebody felt that was an inappropriate image.
Yeah, very striking and upsetting. And in fact, I have another daughter that's in 10th grade at Bartram, and hers was edited even higher. And so she's much more shy and doesn't want to be, you know, focused on. But either way, I mean, there was a myriad of other kids that had some really, really bad edits. And it's shameful. And I know we've since seen some emails from this teacher that's responsible, and she's not, like, taking ownership over it, but I do feel the school board did take it to heart, it seems, by their comments at the end of our public comment series. So I'm hopeful. I hope they've gotten the message. I hope they do the right thing.
I hope so too, Taryn, and it's good to hear your perspective as a mom. You know, we have two daughters too, and we've had personal experience with this. The dress code situation with teenage girls, teenage girls have enough problems with their body image and their self-esteem, and this kind of thing does not help at all. I can tell you that from my own life. So, Taryn, thank you so much for your thoughts. That's a stepmother of one of the girls there at Bartram Trail. And okay, guys, lots of other news happened this week. So this is now our lightning round. I'm going to just throw out the sound effect. Josh Torres, our director, surprising me with that. Thank you, Josh. Okay, let's talk quickly about some other news and notes from the week. For the first time, I believe, ever, the Jacksonville City Council is led by two African Americans. Sam Newby is the new president and Terrence Freeman the new vice president. This is the first time in Jacksonville history that the council will be led by African Americans. So that is something we wanted to make note of. Tim Gibbons, tell us about the groundbreaking, which we've been waiting for a long time, for a new development on the South Bank, now called River's Edge. Tell us about that.
We have been waiting for that forever. So that happened earlier this week. It's the project over near the school board building. For those familiar with the area, it used to be owned by JEA. It was bought by local developers about 6 years ago. They couldn't get that project together, so one of their lenders, Preston Hollow Capital, stepped in, and they have big plans for the site. It's going to have parks, it's going to have residents, it's going to have retail, it's going to be cool.
Very cool. Charles Griggs, what's on your radar this week?
Well, we can't get away from the show without talking about the great Buckman Bridge massacre yesterday with the traffic. That was crazy. I mean, it impacted traffic all over the area, not just on the bridge, but people were scrambling to try to find alternate routes all around town. And we hope they get that situation taken care of in the short run, because I know a lot of people are still a little apprehensive about going across that bridge.
And it shows you the need for infrastructure improvements too. Dan Scanlon, indeed. How about you?
Traffic column points out, and my story points out this week in the Times Union, this is the first summer weekend in over a year where life can possibly return to normal. So safety officials are saying swim safely, drive safely, boat safely. Make sure that you don't become a statistic. The beaches have already been wild and crazy, and we've already had one person died in that riptide last week.
That's right. Thank you for that reminder as we head into Memorial Day weekend. And last but definitely not least, Sydney Bowles, what are you working on?
Our redistricting committee here in the Jacksonville City Hall has been meeting in advance of the, you know, the upcoming redistricting with their lame duck session. The next city council president is likely to change up that committee. So they're learning how to redistrict, but they likely won't be the ones doing it. So TBD on what that new committee ends up deciding.
We'll follow that. Well, thank you, Sydney Bowles, Charles Griggs, Dan Scanlon, and Tim Gibbons for being with us. And have a great Memorial Day weekend, everyone. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Melissa.
Relax and be safe.
Thank you. You too. In a moment, as we look ahead to the holiday, the return of the Jacksonville Home and Patio Show. And keep listening for our ticket giveaway. That's in a moment. It's the biggest stories affecting the Sunshine State. Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
Each week at noon, we interview newsmakers and people from across the state discussing the stories and issues that affect your life. What's driving the conversation in Florida?
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Every Friday at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
A vaccination milestone, a somber first anniversary, and another mass shooting. California's governor offers his condolences and asks, what's wrong with us?
It just feels like this happens over and over and over again. Rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat.
I'm Jen White. We'll get to all of it on the Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, after a year-long hiatus due to the pandemic, the Jacksonville Home and Patio Show is coming back this year to the Prime Osborne Convention Center. I got a preview from spokesperson Liz Morgan. Take a listen. Hi, Liz. Good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's great to talk to you.
Well, like a lot of things, the Jacksonville Home and Patio Show went on about a year-long hiatus due to the pandemic, but it is coming back this Memorial Day weekend to its traditional spot at the Prime Osborne Convention Center. This is always a fun show to check out. What's happening with it this year?
Sure. Well, yeah, originally the show takes place in March, so this year we're over Memorial Day, which is slightly different. So the show, which typically starts on Thursday, starts on a Friday and runs right through Memorial Day. And, you know, a lot of things are going to be the same. It's aisles upon aisles of everything home improvement. But I think the biggest change is that during the pandemic, home improvement just spiked. It just surged. And people were, you know, out of necessity having to make changes to their homes, you know, from work from home being a huge driver of trends because, you know, a lot of companies are opting not to have people come to the office. So that temporary space, you know, maybe people were set up at a little nook in the kitchen is now permanent. So people are looking for ways to change with work from home. But also, when you think about our pandemic lives, there's an online stat that I saw that, you know, 42% of people took up gardening in 2020 over the previous year, 42% increase. So, and that is not going to slow down. More people are gardening both for the kind of zen and stress relief aspect of it, but also they're growing their own vegetables, they're growing herbs. So you're going to see a lot more things that lean towards that, from raised container beds to garden benches and that kind of thing. So the pandemic's effect on our lives is going to kind of be seen throughout the show.
Yeah, I really do think everybody has sort of turned to home and hearth as a source of comfort and security in this time. So this will be fascinating to see some of these attractions. And then also, you know, this is just a way, I think, for people to get out of the house, enjoy themselves over the Memorial Day holiday, check out something new. And certain categories of people have special attractions, right? EMTs and healthcare workers, teachers, seniors, military personnel, they all are getting discounts or free admission. Is that right?
That's right. And yeah, this is the largest consumer show to return to the Prime Osborne, really since the pandemic and since masks are no longer required. I mean, they're definitely encouraged. But we do see that people are wanting to get out. And the first day of the show is Hero Day. That's on Friday. So every year, but especially this past year, frontline workers, EMTs, military, retired military police get in free. And also, you know, teachers. Teachers have been more important than ever and have had to pivot, like, you know, more so than anybody else this year. So on Sunday, it is Teachers Day, and they do receive free admission on Sunday. So we're you know, just the smallest thing we can do to honor them for their work this year with our kids.
Sure. And aren't some celebrities going to be on hand, too, from the home and design world?
You know, not this year. Really, this year's focus is on delivering those products, those home improvement things. You know, 3 out of 4 people started a home improvement project over the pandemic and are looking at another one. And so it's all focused this year on kind of that all under one roof, shop, compare, and save, where we brought together local and regional experts where people can come, ask their questions, talk about their projects, and really get those projects scheduled and in motion. And in a lot of cases, for a lot of our exhibitors, this is the place where they are offering sometimes their deepest discounts on projects of the year. So the big focus is going to be really on shopping. And we've seen in the other shows, home shows across the country, people are really not just browsing to get ideas. I mean, they're doing that, but they are actively working on a project. And so what you'll see there is the focus on the home improvement projects. We do have some very cuddly, adorable VIPs coming on Sunday. The ACPS is doing a Petapalooza Adopt-a-thon. We've had that for several years. It's very successful. So that's going to be happening from 10 to 3. And we're also having food trucks out there on Saturday and on Monday.
Yeah.
So on Memorial Day, you don't.
Fun. Check it out all weekend at the Prime Osborne, the Jacksonville Home and Patio Show. And Liz Morgan, spokesperson for the event. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. We've got 2 pairs of tickets to give away to the 2021 Jacksonville Home and Patio Show. Drop us an email right now at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, and we will pick 2 winners at random. Email us now to get your free pair of tickets to the Jack's Home and Patio Show at the Prime Osborne. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. And thanks to all of our guests and callers, along with producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, editorial director Jessica Palumbo, and digital editor Bill Bortsfield. Again, the email address to get in touch with us, firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And make sure to join us today at noon for the Florida Roundup, where we round up the biggest stories across the state this week and take calls from listeners from the Panhandle down to the Keys. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News, 89.9 Jacksonville. We'll be off Monday for Memorial Day, back Tuesday, so everyone have a safe and happy holiday weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.